Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Alien Talk Podcast. This is the show where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and as always, where we push the limits of our understanding. We are your inquisitive and truth-seeking hosts, Joe Landry and Nori Olford, and we appreciate all of you tuning in for another great episode. Is the Earth hollow? As a little kid, I used to think it was, and apparently there were other people in the ancient world who thought so as well. The bigger question, Lori, is if it were hollow, what or who would be inside of it?
Yeah, and of course, Joe, when we were kids, we believed, or we were even told by some adults, that hell was inside the earth. We were taught to think that the devil and all of his demonic horde of minions reside deep under the ground. So before we delve into this topic today, we want to apologize for not having our scheduled guest appear on the program as we previously had announced. There was a last minute change that came up and we were not able to record with her. So unfortunately, these things do happen.
Indeed, they do. It's just a fact of life that not all guests nor all podcasts are a good fit with one another. We regret to say that, but you just have to press on when that happens. So that is what we're going to do. And so we bring you our topic for today, which is the legend of the hollow earth known in relation to Greek, Chinese, Nordic, and Germanic mythology as a kingdom that is situated inside the earth called Agartha.
Right. And this tale of Agartha was pretty much unheard of in recent times until Gerard Incasse republished an 1886 story that was initially put out by a French occultist named Alexandre Saint-Yves de Avedre. It was called Mission d'Inde in Europe. And then after World War I, German occults like that of the Thule Society began showing interest in the mythical Agartha, which, as you said, is related to more ancient stories.
Now, we all know through modern geology that the Earth is not hollow like some Fabergé egg. There is a crust of solid rock comprised mostly of silicon, carbon, and metallic oxide compounds, aka rocks and minerals. And that extends for about 25 miles, which is a layer called the lithosphere, until it reaches the plastic asthenosphere. And that is a layer of crust where the heat keeps the rock in a gooey and pliable state, sort of like semi-molten. And that's about another 25 miles. And then below that is the mantle, made of molten minerals and metals. And that is about 1,800 miles thick. And then there is the outer core of liquid nickel and cobalt, surrounding the inner core of solid nickel and cobalt. So you might be wondering how scientists know this, if no one has been down there to see it. Well, they only know it from indirect evidence, you know, measurements and observations made through the study of volcanism, seismography, plate tectonics, geomagnetism, gravitation, and the composition of minerals. But is there direct evidence? Well, not much. Remember, less than 20% of the bottom of the oceans have ever been seen at all. That, according to an article in National Geographic magazine, which is dated January 21st, 2011. And that's because people can't go there to look at it. Plus, there is so much of it. So in the same way, what is below the crust of the Earth has not been seen.
So is there any proof that the inside of the Earth could be able to sustain life with an atmosphere rich in oxygen? And from the model you just described, it would seem pretty unlikely, right? But the thought that it could exist goes back quite a way, with all of the ancient and medieval models of the universe placing an abyss that exists below the world and where unusual beings live, some that are like strange animal species and some that are humanoid in appearance. And there are many people who believe that our planet was and is hollow and that an ancient society thrived inside of it. Now, according to a diary journal kept by American Admiral Richard Byrd, who is credited with being one of the first guys to have reached both the North and South Poles, there are details logged about him discovering a large subterranean chasm in Antarctica in which there were huge trees and other tropical flora, mammoth-looking animals, and an ancient yet very sophisticated race of humans. After the completion of his 1926 flight over the North Pole, Byrd expounded in his journal about the preparation for the possibility of hostile planes coming from the polar regions based on his own experience where his expedition came under attack by UFOs and USOs. And many think that these are the flying saucers he observed, possibly coming from a passageway near the South Pole that leads to Agartha. Now, in his 1922 book, Beasts, Men, and Gods, the Polish explorer Ferdinand Ossendowski wrote of a story about such a subterranean kingdom inside the earth. And according to him, this kingdom is also known through Buddhism as a mythical and legendary society called Agarthi or Agartha. Theosophists believe that Agarthi to be a large area of sophisticated caverns that are below Tibet and are occupied by demigods referred to as the Asuras. They were referred to as demigods for a reason, and that was because they possessed technology much more advanced than the ordinary people.
And Agartha is also associated with the legendary place called Shangri-La. We've all heard of that. And it's really just a derivation of a similar imagery, which is how one of the entrances is believed to be in the Tibetan mountains, Shangri-La and Agartha. And it gives it a lot of Eastern mystical appeal. So these names are what you might call made up, but they are based on mythical and literary constructs that go back thousands of years regarding this idea of a world existing beneath ours. So actually the name Agartha as well as Shangri-La are made up from occultists and esoterics in fairly recent times. Like you mentioned, Lori, Ancasa and Del Vedre wrote about a place called Agartha, and it seemed to be based on much older myths of places that had already been around, namely Valhalla and Nordic Scandinavian lore, and Shambhala from Tantric Buddhism. And these depict a state of enlightenment that is experienced either through transcendental meditation or else in a glorious afterlife. However, within these traditions, as well as others, is the idea that another realm exists far below our ground.
Well, going back to Admiral Byrd, his claim gets even more strange. He later in his journal mentioned that the airplane he was flying came under control of those sophisticated race of humans that he was talking about. And he said they did so with the use of saucer-shaped craft that forced him to land. Then he said that he met these human-like beings, human-like meaning not exactly like human-like, like us, and that they were from Agartha under the earth. The thing is, Byrd was a naval commander and followed the orders of his superiors. If they told him not to go public with these accounts, or they told him not to go public with those accounts, and strangely enough, before his life was over, he never came out and admitted that the journal entry was fake. He died, he never recanting his story, either publicly or privately. And that is also a very common theme with the phenomena of encounters, and that is that people who experience them swear throughout their lives, even up to death, that they are or were real encounters.
Indeed, and that is the case with many of them. There is no doubt in their minds about what they experienced, you know, whatever it may be. Now, actually, the Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen reached the South Pole in 1911, and he did so without doing any flying. It was a completely a ground expedition, and he did not ever provide a report about any kind of strange activity, although he did nearly die from his expedition, and he just did not keep a good record in terms of what he encountered. It was really just the basic stuff of weather conditions and distance traveled. So it's not really well known if Amundsen encountered anything about Agartha at Antarctica. Richard Byrd certainly did, and he went on to say in his journal that the inhabitants from there discussed it to him their concerns about the use of atomic bombs and wanted him to be their spokesperson to the governments of the world, advising them of these concerns. Now, maybe it was because Byrd was a proponent he was not a big proponent of nuclear weapons and nuclear warfare. And maybe he wanted to log this in his journal about a civilization that is more advanced than us, and that it was showing their dismay about that. It could be that he had his own personal agenda for saying this. So we don't know. And this is kind of a theme with such encounters, right? That we have this message given to a spokesman to tell the world, warning all humanity about our geopolitical state of affairs.
Yeah, and I mean, we brought that up in our last episode about the Zimbabwe UFO contact, where, you know, these alien beings told, and they weren't political officials, but they were kids, but they pretty much gave them the same message. Remember about how the, you know, there's going to be like apocalyptic ending to the world, and how we're damaging the earth and all of that sort of thing.
Right. In that case, it was about pollution and,
right.
I guess climate change was sort of the theme. So again, it's an ideology. It seems to be coming across, one that we've talked about as humans, and lo and behold, the alien race is talking about the same thing.
Yeah. And it would make sense, I guess, for them to be concerned about what humans are doing. In some esoteric teachings, Tibetan Buddhism, there are said to be highly intelligent and enlightened beings called the Nagas that come from underground and are greatly susceptible to the suffering caused by humans and their carelessness towards the earth. The Nagas are believed to be divine or partly divine. Actually, they're supposed to be a race of half human, half serpent beings who are from the underworld and sometimes take on human form. I guess you can say it's like a superpower of theirs, you know, much like Mystique in the X-Men, right?
Yeah.
They are usually in three forms, which are humans with snakes on their heads as serpents or as half human, half snake. I mean, they may be the reptilians.
And they do sound reptilian. So, this whole idea of a whole earth habitat and civilization was actually pretty tantalizing to the people in the Victorian era. Remember that whole theosophy school with its esoteric figures like Edgar Cayce and Helena Blavatsky, the Thule Society, the Aquarian Brotherhood Foundation with that figure known as Brother 12, all of that. And it was really big in the late 19th century and early 20th century, when there was something like an occult revival. And that was within the context of an even bigger spiritual revival going on around the world that included a lot of religious movements, even within Christianity. We've heard of the Great Awakenings, and this invigorating desire to obtain apocryphal knowledge of things like Agartha was part of that spiritual movement, that religious movement. So, you know, one of my favorite authors when I was growing up was the French writer Jules Verne. I love to read the stories From the Earth to the Moon, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and of course, his novel Journey to the Center of the Earth. And these were written in that time period, the late 19th century. And to no surprise, they were very popular. So in the novel Journey to the Center of the Earth, Verne entertains the Agartha myth, even though he doesn't mention the name Agartha. And he does so by describing how these characters in the story, on the surface, they travel deep down into a vast chasm and find a world full of strange and wondrous creatures and plant life, and that were around all the way back during the age of the dinosaurs. So it's like the prehistoric Jurassic period was preserved in the center of the earth.
Well, it is a really good story, by the way. And well, according to an article on Gaia.com dated November 15th, 2019, titled Hollow Earth Theory, Is the Subterranean Civilization of Agartha Real? In nearly every ancient culture, there are allusions to the inner realms of the earth, as along with beliefs that there are people dwelling in them. We are familiar with some from none other than religious dogma, as we said earlier, how it is commonly believed that hell and purgatory are located in the center of the earth, where there are the devil and all the people in damnation. This imagery has been pretty powerfully ingrained in our psyches since childhood, and it's something that has been passed on from generation to generation.
Well, oddly enough, Edmund Halley, the astronomer who discovered Halley's Comet back in the 17th century, proposed that the Earth is hollow, and that is comprised of concentric shells isolated from each other by their own individual atmospheres. He sort of depicted it as like those Russian nesting dolls where one fits inside the other. Instead of one very large cavern, there are several of them, one layer after the other. And Halley presented this idea to the Royal Society of London in 1692 on the basis of magnetic field readings that he made, even with his primitive techniques back then, as well as his knowledge of the gravitational pull of the sun and the earth, and the sun and the moon on the earth. And according to him, these multiple layers of worlds were even separated by these atmospheres and got their light from, geoluminescence, which are like glowing rocks or heat from the center core. But there were others at the time, scientific thinkers, who pictured a similar hypothesis or a much simpler one. And that is a hollow earth with one single vast, large cavern, like a big hollow ball. And based on this idea, the earth had another sun that was hanging in its center that would provide light and warmth and nourishment to a lush, habitable environment, complete with large cities, farmlands, forests, mountains, and oceans, just like on the surface. And there was also an officer, a U.S. Army officer named Captain John Cleve Sims, Jr., who in 1818 declared in an official memorandum that the earth was undoubtedly hollow. He sent this to his chain of command. And he also sought funds for an expedition to the North Pole, where he expected to be able to find this large aperture that could access the hollow earth. And he thought it would have been thousands of miles across and would gradually take you down into the center as you traveled further into that northbound direction. And Sims also succeeded in getting Congress to vote on the funding for this expedition. They actually approved it. However, Sims died before anything came of it. And enthusiasm for the whole venture dwindled shortly after the election of President Andrew Jackson back in the 1820s.
Now, it's interesting that you bring up this idea about a large opening at the North Pole. We know that the Arctic and the North Pole are packed with ice. And so there are many holes that lead to the Arctic Ocean beneath it. But Antarctica and the South Pole are on a landmass. And there are stories about military aircraft flying over the South Pole where the crews claim to have seen a large opening in the packed ice, not far from it. It was supposedly extremely large, like miles across. And according to the website exopolitics.org, it was seen numerous times throughout the 80s and the 90s. Some of those crew members were interviewed and with their identities concealed, and they told of how they were ordered not to speak about the large hole, as well as some of the other things that they had seen, such as large saucer-shaped craft hovering nearby. At one point, one of the pilots was told to never again fly into that specific region of Antarctica. And this is reminiscent of the entry in Admiral Byrd's journal about his airplane coming under control of such craft.
We have to wonder if this is related to what happened on a later mission to Antarctica, later after Byrd's expedition, considered the top secret Operation High Jump, which was a massive expedition to Antarctica after World War II. And it included more than 4,000 men who were selected to go and live there for 8 months and study and map the place out. And this operation involved also a total of 13 Navy support ships, as well as an aircraft carrier, and all the support helicopters and flying boats and an entourage of other traditional aircraft that were land-based aircraft, not seaplanes. So why didn't something like this size happen so quickly? And it didn't end there. There was yet another undertaking 8 years later in the 50s, and that was termed Operation Deep Freeze. Byrd was part of that one. And that was meant to help establish a permanent U.S. presence in Antarctica and at the South Pole, as there were other nations doing the same thing. And much of this was for scientific purposes, as it was said in publicized mission statements, but there has always been rumors of it entailing something more.
Well, even Hitler believed that Antarctica was a place that existed. There are Nazi maps containing the directions of how to locate it. There is an account that Heinrich Himmler had come across a letter from a U-boat navigator named Carl Unger, who claimed his crew had found its way to Antarctica and that the Earth is indeed hollow. There may not be evidence that proves this, but there is enough to show that the Nazis invested quite a bit of time and resources trying to find Antarctica.
This, according to an article by Gaia.com, was to have as a last resort for Hitler to escape in case of a dire emergency and a last-ditch effort to save himself. Actually, the most common diagram of Agartha that we have to this day was drawn by a German scientist back in 1935.
Yeah, I think you can find those on the internet. You just Google Agartha, it'll come up as one of the images. It's a pretty decent diagram dating back to, like you said, 1935. And this shouldn't be too surprising, as we know that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis oversaw something known as the Abernabe, which, for lack of better words, was a deep-rooted occult program. And it was straight from the German high command, and it involved the SS. For that matter, they also had secret expeditions and research projects in the Himalayas, which they thought might be another part of the world where a passageway to Agartha could be found. And this part of the Nazi occultism was centered not only in their belief in the existence of the Aryan race, but also in finding it, or at least its remnants. So Agartha to them was the land of the Aryans, and Hitler was obsessed with finding proof of it. And this cosmology that was communicated, and it was understood by biblical writers. For instance, the model we have prevalent to the Hebrews, but there existed a firmament above the earth and a deep abyss lying below it, and that water surrounded everything. Any idea of a spherical earth in ancient times didn't seem to come around until sometime of the Greek thinkers like Euclid and Ptolemy, Aristophanes. And so we have to wonder how the story of the Great Flood might pertain to Agartha, right? So perhaps many have pondered why it is written in the book of Genesis, where it describes how water covers the whole planet during the flood, even covering the highest mountains, which I guess would be implying Mount Everest, by more than 20 feet. This is according to chapter 7, verse 20. And it also talks about the fountains of the deep breaking forth and the floodgates of the heavens being opened. And so the question is, Laurie, is where did all of that water come from? Aside and enough to raise the sea level by more than 6 miles around the globe from where it currently is situated. And that's a lot of water. That's an unfathomable amount of water, and also where it all go afterwards. So according to a finding by Brookhaven National Laboratory in Illinois, as well as researchers at the University of New Mexico, there is potentially water present deep within the Earth's mantle, about 400 miles thick. And based on their calculations, there is more water there estimated than all the oceans by a factor of four. So at 4 times all the water that is in the oceans and in the outer mantle. That's a lot. This is according to an article at BNL.gov dated June 14th, 2014. And these molecules of water are supposedly locked within the crystalline lattice bonds of a mineral called ringwoodite. And ringwoodite is deep in the earth, and under extreme heat and pressure, it acts like a big sponge that holds the water. So it's not like there are big pools of it sloshing around. At least scientists don't think so. They're not completely sure. We know that there are reservoirs in the ground that hold a considerable amount of liquid water, but they're not as far down as the mantle.
Yeah, well, if that is true, then the reference to an abyss filled with water may not be that far off. With those ancient models that illustrate this, as well as the firmament, we find the references to places like Hades and Hell, or Sheol, as it is called in the Hebrew scriptures. While this is mostly allegorical and religious in context, it provides us a good idea of how ancient peoples understood the earth, which was like it was inside something, like one of those snow globe shaker things. There is the mention of the windows of heaven holding in the waters above, sometimes called the expanse. That is the firmament, and over it is the heavenly seat where God sits. Likewise, below the ground, but above the abyss, is Sheol or Hades, the abode of the dead. This imagery that the Bible gives us shows that people believed in an inner earth realm that held souls or bodies, or perhaps even both.
Yeah, and while this epistemological model may not be accurate, it does show that there was some understanding about the hydrology of the planet, namely that there is more water than we can see. And I've seen some pretty decent diagrams to illustrate this, with a flat terra, the ground upheld by pillars that have fountains going down to the waters below in the abyss, which connect to the oceans. So this idea of water in the mantle, not exactly direct parallel to this, but the concept is similar. And then, of course, you have the firmament above it with holds of water. And then beyond that is the sun, moon, and planets and stars. And the firmament encapsulates everything below it, namely the ground and the earth that people live in. So in the present day model, we have the inner structure and composition of the earth, which has been around since the early 20th century. It's probably pretty close to spot on. We can see a good bit of evidence that supports the notion that it gets really hot when we reach a certain depth, and that there is molten rock down there, magma and lava, and that there are tremendous pressures involved with plate tectonics and rock layer formation. Even though, literally speaking, we've never bored down far enough to reach the mantle, we can still see signs of it. So it would seem that life cannot survive being down there. However, that is not to say that there aren't large carnivorous pockets of empty space that are not all the way down in the mantle, but are within the lithosphere. The inside of the Earth doesn't have to be completely hollow, even though some stories say it is, but it can be dabbled with hollow spaces in particular regions, like under the Himalayas or Iceland or the Antarctica or even the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, but there are some cultures that talk about Argartha as a place where actual cities exist, and that it is accessed through certain passageways located throughout the world. Like you mentioned before, Joe, how in Tibetan Buddhism, there is a mystical and placid realm called Shambhala that is reachable somewhere in the Himalayan mountains. That is believed by some to be associated with Argartha. Hinduism has a tale of a lost antediluvian city with caves and underground entrances, and some people have associated it with the land of Aryavarta, or abode of the excellent ones, which would mean that it's a land ruled by a super race that existed for thousands of years with advanced technology. That's most likely what Hitler was referring to when he believed that whites or Caucasians are descendants of the Aryan race, a super race. Even before the war described in the Maribarta, some were believing this ancient race to be descendants of Atlantis, Lemuria, and Mu, which were destroyed via war and other circumstances that sent them into the caverns deep within the earth, where eventually Argartha may have been established before that.
And don't forget Hyperborea, which is another civilization located in the far northern part of the earth, and it is said by the ancient Greeks to be a place where people who had never been seen had dwelt in a warm and sunny climate despite being near or above the Arctic Circle. And by the Middle Ages, the term Hyperborean came tied with the belief that there is a place called the end of the earth. It became synonymous with the phrase end of the earth. So yes, mythology is filled with stories of fantastic places whose exact locations are not known, such as Avalon and the legends of King Arthur and High Brazil and Celtic and Gaelic lore and the city of El Dorado, sought after by the Spaniards when they arrived in Mesoamerica. And likewise, what happened to all of these places, it is not exactly known. They simply disappeared, became erased.
And that, of course, makes us wonder where they disappeared to. There is another place documented in the Mahabharata known as Patala. So Hit 2 is similar in description to a place inside the earth. However, Patala is supposedly ruled by those beings known as the Nagas, and they are at war with Argartha. They are depicted in Hindu and Buddhist illustrations as looking half human and half reptilian. They also are referred to as a highly advanced race with great technology, and that sometimes they kill and torture humans. And in Sanskrit, the word for Naga is a snake. And there are several words for snake in general. And one of the mostly used is Sarpa, close to serpent. In Indo-European etymology, they are referred to as hairless, naked animals, related to the English word naked.
And there is somewhat of a connection with what you just described there with the Bible. If you remember, after Adam and Eve listened to the serpent, that they noticed their nakedness. Now, this could not be literal. This could be an analogy. This could be an allegorical component explaining how human DNA had been mixed with something else. So compared to other mammals, humans are hairless. We are uniquely different in that way, in that we have no fur. We have hair. Most of us have, some hair. We're not
Or in
completely
others.
monkeys and dogs and cats and all the other animals of the that are out there, the mammals of the animal kingdom. We have much less hair than they do. So this kind of plays on that idea that, hey, we realize we're different from the other mammals.
Yeah, by quite a bit. But so being naked is like a metaphor for Homo sapiens coming separate from the rest of the primates then.
Right. So the question becomes, do these tales and legends of Agartha in a subterranean world suggest the presence of, say, extraterrestrial operations that are clandestinely taking place to bring all this about, like we're talking about? A couple of years ago, we mentioned how the reports of USOs, underwater submersible objects, were appearing in many different parts of the ocean, and that they could have something to do with an alien undersea base or multiple bases. And if there were parts of the Earth's crust that are hollow, it doesn't have to be the whole Earth is hollow, but if there are places where there are huge spacious chasms and caverns, perhaps hundreds or thousands of miles large, in length or width, then could, alien bases be located within those large chasms? And in reference to those passageways or tunnels that are believed to lead to Agartha, we find that, some are underwater, like the Bermuda Triangle, but it's also believed that they're in places around the world where there are high number of UFO sightings, reported sightings, and a lot of them are in mountain regions.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, we have not been down there, so we don't know. Like underneath the Bermuda Triangle, underneath the bottom, the seafloor, there may be bases underneath that. We just don't know. But according to an article by Joni Folletto on Discovery.com titled "Allegedly, There Is a Secret Underground Alien Base in Dulce, New Mexico," dated August 1st, 2019. There is an underground base where you will find human, animal, and human alien hybrids. It's also known as a place that has advanced technology and was reported to have an alien battle with human soldiers where 60 personnel lost their lives. And we spoke about this gentleman before, named Philip Snyder. He's a former explosive engineer, brought this whole thing to light. Even when he had top secret clearance, much like Bob Lazar, but he came forward and spilt it all. Like he spilled the beans on everything, including the alien battles and the ongoing war with this leopard type or reptilian type beings. And he also claimed to have worked on the construction of the secret underground base in 1979. Well, Folletto continues in the article that there were some disturbing reports from around the area by police officers, and one of the reports was from a state trooper named Valdez, who claimed in interviews that he witnessed black, silent, sophisticated spacecraft, and went as far as to say that he discovered a fetus inside a dead cow from one of those cattle mutilation call-outs, but it wasn't a calf fetus. It, according to him, his quote was that it looked like a human, a monkey, and a frog. It didn't have any bones in the head. It was all full of water. And there was also a physicist with a PhD named Paul Benowitz, who was certain that there was extraterrestrial involvement going on in that area. And he was picking up radio signals near Dulce, which was too small of a town to receive these kinds of messages, and believed them to be coming from underground and going toward a target high up in the sky. And I think the basic point with Agartha and any living presence inside the Earth is that we don't know for sure what all is down there. And we have a good idea, not perfect knowledge, just as we realize that most of the ocean hasn't been explored, and certainly the moon and the other planets, we also realize that we haven't seen what all is deep under our feet.
So, are the mysteries below the surface of the Earth as great and as comparable as those that are above it? As what we wonder about life, out among the stars, and the search for intelligence out there, can it also be applied to the wonder of life and intelligence below our feet, inside the Earth? Could, what is above be the same as what is below? As always, you, the audience, must decide. And that will wrap it for today. As it is Super Bowl Sunday in the US, and for anyone watching the big NFL game, we hope your team wins. I can't even say who I'm going for, quite honestly.
Yeah, me neither. I was rooting for the Ravens, but that didn't work out too well. So, but anyway, I still like watching it. It's a good time with the family and stuff, and good food.
I was rooting for the Lions, so neither one of us got our wish. And also something to note, yesterday was Chinese New Year, which is the Lunar New Year. And someone asked me, why is it that it occurs in February? And as it turns out, the date is set to be on the day after the first new moon, which was on Friday, the February the 9th. And that begins a complete lunar cycle before the first day of spring. So the new moon that we have in March is too close to the vernal equinox for a full lunar month to finish out. So it has to be the one before that. And that's why it starts in February. Just some trivia.
Yeah, that's good trivia. So next week we have a real treat, as special guests Stephen and Leslie Shaw will be on the show. They are a husband and wife team of researchers who have done quite a bit of study on the abduction phenomena, the ancient alien theory, and the reports that have been made about UFO sightings. And they will join us next time to discuss some of the things that they found out on these subjects, which they put in their book titled "Who Are They and What Are They Up To?" So I expect it to be a very informative and thought-provoking episode. So please tune in to that next week on February the 19th.
Yes, their book is available on Amazon, both on Kindle and on paperback. And like you said, Laurie, they've done a lot of research on humanity's long history of possible alien encounters all the way back to biblical times. They integrate a lot of concept material, not only from the stories of recent sightings, but also with what has been learned through the studies of things like archaeology, human evolution, and even the teachings from Eastern religion. And they also expound on some ideas that we talked about today concerning the hollow earth. So, yes, I think it'll be a very intellectually stimulating discussion, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, for sure. And please check out our website, where you can find all of the details on that and our other episodes. That's www.aliental.com, and it's also on our Facebook page.
Yeah, and we would love to hear any of your comments or questions about today's topic or any of the others that we've shared with you. So, everyone, until next time, and as always, stay curious.